Thank you for downloading this podcast of Ian Stone talking about athletics coach Alec Nelson at MMU's Institute for Performance Research Symposium on Sporting Lives, held on December the 4th, 2010.
Alec Nelson, professional runner and athletics coach. And what I want to do is outline his sporting career. I want to set that into a wider sporting and athletics context, social and athletics context. I want to propose some sort of model that helps us to understand his life and career, what he did and the circumstances he experienced. But I also have a warning about dabbling in family history. You never know where a few clicks of Google will take you. And indeed, 6 months ago, as far as I was concerned, Alec Nelson was somebody else, and I knew very little about him. I just knew he was a member of the family, and so on. And this is my father's scribbled note about... This pretty much sums up what I knew about Alec Nelson when I started, before I clicked that Google. He was at Cambridge, actually Jesus College. I haven't checked that yet, but athletics coach. More than just Jesus College, for the whole of the university, I find. Served with the Blue Cross First Aid, not quite right, but he did serve in the Great War in the ambulance service, mostly Italy, that's correct, and so on. And twin brother of Beatrix Levy, who was the mother of my grandmother, and he won that particular race. He was the first born in that particular pair. Now, this is the family photograph that's actually been on my wall, Alec Nelson and his wife, because it says on the back, Mr. and Mrs. Alec Nelson. And, you know, if you've got any photographs you're passing on to people, do put on the back what it is. But be careful what you write. This is Alec Nelson takes the salute. And here are all these bedraggled sort of people at some kind of exercise during the war going past Alec Nelson and his wife and saluting him. Or does he? Does he take the salute? That's the question. Come back to that in a second. His father, Robert, he was born in Fife in the early 19th century. He relocated to Hayes. Family, very much working class, agricultural, gardening, domestic service, that kind of thing. His mother was Elizabeth Reeves. Again, Wiltshire family moved to Orpington, and that family were really own account carpenters. So nothing particularly special in the background, although my family has always treated him as a bit special, a bit different. And that picture we had certainly suggested he might be. Alec and his twin Beatrice and elder brother William were products, it turns out, of a liaison between Robert and Elizabeth somewhere around Orpington in the 1870s. He was registered Leopold Reeves, great monarchist, my family. No father on the birth certificate. He later reverted to the name Alec Nelson, and Alec is common on his father's side. Elizabeth Nelson is used in all the censuses, and she always put herself down as a widow. His athletics career, he was naturally gifted. There's a wonderful story he told in a newspaper of being so fleet of foot as a child, he delivered made a delivery of kidneys for the local butcher, and the butcher sacked him when he got back because he said you couldn't possibly have delivered it in that time. Somehow, and we don't yet know, he became a member of Goldsmiths Athletic Club, later on also joining Brighton, but and really racing in the handicap races of the 880, the half mile to the 2 mile range. He was a good but not outstanding athlete. I think, you know, most of the evidence suggests he was a decent athlete. He was third in the half mile at the amateur championships in Northampton in 96, and again third in 1901. He set the three-quarter of a mile amateur record, and I don't know how contested that sort of distance is, 3 minutes 11, beating his great rival Joe Binks in 1898. Wait a second for that one. And then in Kensington Oval, he again beat Jay Binks by 10 yards in a 1,000-yards invitation scratch race. So, you know, we got evidence of him being winning significant races and so on, but we shouldn't overrate it. Here he is around 1900. And now we can have snapshots of the actual run against Binks, because they emerged from a Cambridge archives. There they are, Alec on the left, Binks on the right, all set to go at Reading in August 1999. If I've got that date right, I may have got that right. Did I say 99, 98? Anyway, there they go. You can see the smoke from the gun. Here they are, neck and neck near the end. And here's the winner. Now, what's happened to the one who came second? Well, it doesn't make a good picture to have somebody second right on your shoulder. So the best thing to do is to airbrush them out, and then you've got a more memorable picture to preserve. So that, I thought that was a great picture, as well as the people on the left. He progressed to professional status. He married Catherine Smith. They had three children. But I've started thinking, sometime after 1901, he acquired or began competing as a professional. And indeed, in 1905, he won a race for the Professional Half Mile Championship. Neither of us have actually been able to verify that in the documents, but it does say so on his book. More about his book in a minute, at the front of his book. And it's used as ever, you know, people refer to it in different contexts. And one always, we still need to verify how genuine that Professional Half Mile Championship was. But he did have other championships, as we've seen. But why did he turn professional? Part of the reason may be that he was reaching an age where he wasn't going to do any more in amateur athletics or nothing special, but it may have been because he needed to earn some money. His second daughter had club foot, was born with a club foot, and had to have specialist surgery, or did have specialist surgery, because she didn't have to, I suppose, a 3 or 4 week stay in the in Great Ormond Street, with an operation actually conducted by somebody who became very famous for this type of operation. And I just wonder, it's a speculation, we don't know, but it's quite possible that he needed money for this kind of for this operation, and that motivated him. But again, we hopefully will find out more of that later. But certainly the professional race opportunities were relatively scarce, so he couldn't have expected a large amount from this sort of source. He was a professional coach at Cambridge from 1908 to 13, and then again right through to 39. But we're not quite sure how he came to be appointed. He said he met a prominent Cambridge University Athletic Club official at the London Athletics Club in 1907, and one thing led to another. But whatever it was, he didn't do badly, because within 3 or 4 years of coaching, he was actually the Olympic track coach for Britain in Stockholm. War intervened, of course. The Friends Ambulance Unit was where he went. I've got a couple of pictures just to catch up on. There's the athletics, Cambridge athletics team. Dog and all, these were elites, the children of the elite, as you know, of course, and I'll just for future reference refer to the man, back row, second from the right, from the left, that's Rex Woods, Dr. R.S. Woods, we'll come back to him. Alec is there, just right at the back of his blues, as he called them. A critical part of this was to say, he went into the ambulance service, and I remember my uncle always saying, well, he was a conscientious objector. Well, there's nothing in any evidence I have found, and nothing I knew, that actually said, well, you know, he should be a conscientious objector, you know, in his religious background or anything. And I thought, well, he was too old. He didn't have to be, you know, he didn't have to go in the ambulance service to avoid serving in a combative role. Because first of all, conscription didn't come in until 1916, and for married people, not to halfway through 16. And then it was not for people who were over 40, as he was. So that got me thinking, what's going on here? Why did he join? And the answer to that led me to what I think was the way of unlocking his life and making sense of some of the things we talked about in terms of his relationships. The relationship that dominated his professional career. The answer is Philip Noel Baker. I won't go through a lot of the information I've got about Baker, but just set one or two things going. He was a Quaker, a prominent Quaker from a business which was a Quaker business. He was a Cambridge athlete. He was president of CUAC 1910 to 11-12. He was a Stockholm competitor. Begin to see the links. He was sixth in the mile there. When you look at what Nelson did in the ambulance service, the Quaker ambulance service, the Friends ambulance service, he is listed on the medal record as a chauffeur. But there's another little report I came across which relates to the unit, which says the establishment of the ambulance unit is now complete. From commanding officer Baker down, each man has his daily duties. The butler is a well-known English athletic trainer and celebrated starter, and what a character he is too. Dave's word was Batman, and I think it's actually quite right. An officer's servant or orderly. And that, you know, started the thinking about the nature of the relationship between his patron, his minder, Noel Baker, and Alec Nelson. And once I'd got that and could go to the papers of Noel Baker in Churchill College, Cambridge, I came across something like 140 letters between them. They don't cover conveniently every phase of their relationship, but they do cover a span. And what I pick up from those letters is a very strong element of mentoring from one man to the other, from Noel Baker to Alec. And what I find is a very lasting and close relationship, great loyalty on both sides, mutual respect across a class divide, you know, no assumptions, you know, each knew where they stood on this, or where they wanted to be in the case of Noel Baker. And of course, Noel Baker, as many of you will know about Noel Baker, Quaker, I've got some of the details there. He was heavily involved in organising athletics activities. He even inaugurated the Oxford-Cambridge relay races, member of the British Olympic Council and so on, so heavily involved in that. But his family's business was well known to be very ethical, the relationship with the workers was really very respectful and so on, and that seems to have pervaded the relationship that the two had. Here's a bit more. He went on to be Cassell Professor of International Relations in London University. Wait for that. That comes back. Labour MP. He won the Nobel Peace Prize for his various work. But all the way through, reference to his involvement in Olympics. And Virginia Woolf's wonderful diary note, Phil Baker should do half what he does and should drink wine. Here's the ambulance unit back to 1914, just near to Ypres, and his brother is there. I haven't yet identified which one he is. I think he's there. Obviously, he is there. He's on the left in 1924 and on the right in 57. Here's a censored letter from Dunkirk to his sister Beatrice. Here he is in 1915. Obviously, a Batman didn't mean taking a trouser press for his boss or for himself. But anyway, there he is. And now, the third of those pictures allows me to say that Alec is actually the one on the left, not the one taking the salute, but the one on the left helping people get this pretend body or wounded soldier over a fence and an exercise somewhere in England. So we've got to the real Alec Nelson. Here he is because they went first to Ypres and then they went on to Italy and spent most of the time in Italy. Udine is the place from which they organised the ambulance service. Dearest mother and all, just going up near firing line, going on splendid, happy to help the Italians, all we know. They are giving us a royal welcome, all so good to us. Love to all, affectionate son, Alec. So In the interwar years, when the war was over, Alec went back to coaching at Cambridge. Not a simple thing. He'd got himself set up down in Cowes. How I yet don't know, but there was a shipbuilding firm with 2,000 people working for it, destroyers mainly and so on, that actually employed him in welfare work. I think that meant, you know, putting on sports events and so on, supervising that within the company. There was a big challenge there for Noel Baker and so to get him back, because they had to construct an income to get him back. He needed an income. He had a job there. It wasn't going to last that long because the shipbuilding firm, it was post-war and so on, but there's a you know, there was quite a job to do. One of the things they he did, one of the things Noel Baker did to attract him back, linked to his forming of the Achilles Club. The Achilles Club, founded in 1919, was actually a club set up where the Oxbridge people, mainly Oxbridge people who'd left the university, could continue to work in sports and therefore, you know, train and receive training and coaching and so on and work towards their Olympic and international competition goals. So Nelson was sort of taken on as coach there for several years until they lost the Queen's track, in fact, and helped them with advising on laying the track and all sorts of things. And as Guy Butler, one of the Olympic athletes, said, "I'm glad you got Alec involved with Queen's track. He's such a treasure." So obviously, popular and liked man among the athletes. He became a British Olympic track coach in 1920. Again, we've, through the letters, worked out how this happened. This was part of the deal of getting him back, finding a place for him to do a means of paying him through the Achilles Club to actually go and coach the athletics team in Antwerp. But also became a coach at London University. He didn't do this all the year. These were short, you know, these were part-time positions. And again, where was Noel Baker in the 20s? He was in London University, and he wanted to develop the facilities for the Athletics Union, and he wanted to develop coaching, and he had ideas for having lectures on the science of athletics training and so on, which he was setting up. So the kind of setting was clear and understandable in terms of where Noel Baker wanted to be. He became Ireland Olympic coach in the 30s. In 31 he had 14 weeks there, in 32 he had 20 weeks there. Again, part of a general building up of athletics, visiting schools, colleges, giving lectures and demonstrations, and while he was there coaching Bob Tisdall, who finished up a gold medalist at Los Angeles. But he also became a coach to the army. He always had to find appointments, engagements as he called them, and he was engaged by the Army Council because they were a bit concerned that that many of their soldiers were entirely ignorant of the basic principles of running. And what was happening was they had this attack shooting exercise whereby people had to run and then fire, run and then fire. And these chaps were getting so puffed out that they couldn't aim straight. So Alec was brought in to solve this problem, and the Times indeed reported that next year the performances were much better. And it causes me to think, after Spike Milligan, that I should actually write a book called Hitler, my great-great-uncle's part in his downfall. But that's by the by. Right through to the mid-30s, at least, he had regular army training engagements in places like Catterick, Colchester, Bovington, the tank corps down in camp down in Dorset and so on. The professional coach, he was a professional coach, and there's a link here between a new infrastructure that his patron wanted to set up, his patron and his network, his elite athletics network. They wanted to create an infrastructure which was both physical and organisational. They wanted to develop public school athletics, so they got the supply, and university athletics, so they got the supply. They thought that was where the main supply would come from, of British athletes. And they wanted a post-university framework for competitive activity so that there was something to go on to. There's a very modern theme in terms of school and how things go on from there. And Dave's point in an article that he's written is that this is a period of where amateur officials and effortless superiority and so on were coming under challenge. And there's no doubt that Noel Baker and people like Strode, Lieutenant Colonel Strode Jackson and so on, were the people who were supporting, pushing this line seeking a more scientific approach to instruction and so on. Interesting, the Amateur Athletics Association had a similar view that by taking on a more professional coaching person and by having new training facilities at Aldershot, they would have greater representation in the Olympics themselves. Here we are in 1921. We've got, and you get an idea of some of the people he was working with: Henry Stellard, Guy Butler, Harold Abrahams. They're all there. I haven't got time to point them out. If we go to 1924, we've got somebody else there. Second from the left on the front is Alec Nelson's son, Stanley, who was a blue in 1924. Raising questions. What was the son of a college servant doing at Cambridge? How did he get there to study engineering? And, and I haven't answered that yet, but I suspect somewhere there are letters that exist that show that that might have been part of the deal of bringing him back to Cambridge or whatever. Here is Stanley. Who pays the fees? Who pulled the strings? And so what you get, what comes across in all these letters is the trusting and loyal servant. You know, when it was a case of giving up the job in Cowes to return to Cambridge, very uncertain financial position for him, short-term contracts, whatever you say, Mr. Philip, I do, right? A typical sort of comment, I suppose. You can read some of those yourself, but look at this. I'm informed that Mrs. Baker is looking remarkably well, which is a great pleasure. On the other hand, I learn that you're looking very seedy. May I suggest one good cure, 24 hours fasting together with 24 hours in bed? He was very good with his advice, was Ali. How good a coach was he? Because he wasn't a great athlete. He was all right, he was decent, but he wasn't a great athlete. But how good a coach was he? And this gets to our methodology thing this morning. My answer is, on looking at all the evidence, he was actually very good. I've looked at the results. I haven't got a full set yet, but there was clear dominance in the competitions with Oxford, both the sports, the athletics meeting, and the relays. Which, for bizarre reason, the sports were held in early March or mid-March, which seems a cold time of year to me, and the relays were held in December for some reason. But you'll know more about that than me. But they were dominating Oxford, and they were dominating them despite the fact that Oxford had all these Rhodes Scholars. They could recruit athletes from around the world, and they did. And yet he was beating them by developing the talents of public schoolboys, and it was public schoolboys. That was his, where he was drawing from. Harold Abrams said, "Look, after an 8-3 win in 1931, Cambridge have now won on 32 occasions to Oxford's 25. 6 years ago, the two were level. Cambridge superiority has been overwhelming since 26. It was actually superiority before then, but not perhaps overwhelming. Yesterday, Cambridge not only won 8 events out of the 11, but they also had 7 second places and 7 third places. So it was numbers as well. He was packing them in. Oops, I'm just...
1 minute.
1 minute. Oh, goodness me. What else? He wrote a respected book on training. There's a continuing legacy, the Nelson program, which I discovered in another family link in Simcoe, Ontario, Tracy Stone's Women's Gym. They use the Nelson method, which is a bit about walking, long, strong walks and running and so on. There are some of the athletes that he was involved with. During the reign of Alec Nelson, the CUAC almost certainly gained more Olympic medals than any other club in the world, besides contributing to a high proportion of the members of successful British Olympics, British Empire and English international teams. His approach, I've tried to draw it out there, great attention to detail, development of the individual, staged preparation to get them to peak condition, giving them long, slow, steady work now and holding them back for speed as the sports is a bit late this year, Careful observation of each athlete, selecting their best event as well, which is an important part, working on their weaknesses, dealing with their psychological dimensions when they've got the wind up, you know, motivational skills, careful assessment of the balance of the team, the teamwork, the race tactics, the strength of the opposition, the approach of the opposition, plus delegation. Somebody else mentioned delegation. He delegated to his best blues the job of bringing on some of the others so he could concentrate on some bigger club issues and so on. Alec Nelson was an outstanding coach in his times, learned his trade as an athlete through observation, experimentation and so on, reflecting upon experience and so on. He didn't have a sort of body of work to draw from. He had personal attributes and background and experience, such as experience, creativity, enthusiasm, humour, patience and so on, that were all needed for the job. He was critical to the mission by the social of members of this social and sporting elite to develop the British athletics capacity. He was the indispensable servant who was well rewarded by this elite in terms of public recognition, in terms of generous acknowledgements. BBC, Pathé News, they mentioned him and so on very frequently, but they might have done more for him in terms of employment and financial security and physical comfort, because, you know, he was not well off at any time, always worried about his engagements, always trying to cover that. To cover that issue, and I'll stop.
Okay, thanks, Sid.